easier to, if you wanted written notes, you could always use that recording later to do it more thoroughly, more better job maybe than doing it.
Well, I think producing accurate minutes has always been a pain, and it's always been something that took weeks of labor, usually on two people's part, to produce. And I personally, because I'm not the one doing it right now, I'm happy with having a summary if people want to take a quick peek, but if they want to know all the details of what went on, there is recording and they can listen to it.
I think that's all you need.
Okay. So I guess, Lisa, we're still asking you to do the short summary of actions taken or votes made or whatever.
Yep.
Okay.
Can you run the meeting and do that too? I didn't realize you were running the meeting also.
I didn't either.
Who was running the meeting?
So I volunteer someone else.
I can do minutes, I think, if I remember how.
I'm not volunteering because I still saw people trying, people entering the meeting here.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and you've got enough, Dan.
Lisa, why don't you run the meeting? And Beth, if you're willing to do the minutes this time, we can trade off if we want to have any written minutes. I think it's a wonderful solution to have recording available.
It is, but it's nice to have at least, you know, like our motions in writing to refer back, even like for myself. I don't want to sit and listen to a whole meeting again just to find out, you know.
That's true.
Good point.
So was everybody happy with just the list of motions, which is what I did?
Yeah, that was great.
Okay, well, go for it.
Okay.
Dan, what time is it?
It is now 9:06.
6:09, I'm calling the meeting of the Ottawa Rock Water District Work Session 421 at 6:09.
Okay.
Attendance, I'm here.
Lisa
Hall. Who else is here?
I'm here, Beth.
Pat, Lisa. Buzz, Jim, Tom,
Dan,
and the Hearts.
Mm-hmm. And okay. who is Michael's iPad 2? Oh,
is that a journey?
Don't know.
Isn't that Jesus?
Is that you, Buzz?
Isn't that Jesus?
I think it's the Mullins.
Yeah, they were on last meeting.
Who?
Mullen.
Oh, Mullins, yes. Yeah, okay.
I'll invite them to start video if they'd like. Okay.
Okay. I want to formally welcome Tom as a special advisor. Tom, yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
We are so glad to have you. I'm waving. Thumbs up. Everything else. Very happy. The infrastructure report. Jim, Buzz, and Tom, can we please get some details?
Am I up?
Yep.
Yes.
That wonderful
Buzz, when you sit back. You're no, not that far. I think it's your hearing aids are.
No,
your
I ears. Think it's the feedback because we have two.
Yeah.
So we need to turn down the microphone on one or the other of the two, either Jim's machine or Buzz's.
Buzz just exited the.
Oh, okay. Okay. We're going to let you COVID pals be on the same screen and audio then.
We're social distancing. We're good.
Dan wrote a great summary of what happened last Wednesday. And Jim and I added our comments. I don't know if you read what Dan wrote. I don't know what else we could add, but we can answer any questions you might have.
I just want to thank you for all of the input and the comments and the editings and corrections. And I think you had a rougher job than I did just trying to bang out a rough draft. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. That was great.
Rough draft is the hard part for me.
Tom.
I have a few questions about the report that that you and Buzz wrote. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about now?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned a flow measuring device and an open channel flow measuring device, and also mentioned that Spring 2 has a water, visible water flowing that people were, before the cage was installed, that they were using it as a water source?
They were.
I was just curious if open channel flow device or the spring where it is exposed to the air, if that's subject to contamination.
No, it's not. It's no more than an insert. If you visualize a concrete channel, and then if you can maybe remove a foot of it and take out that and put in another concrete channel that has a special shape, that's called a flume. And the height of the water when it runs through the flume is predictable. It's proportional to the height.
Sure, yeah, I understand that. I'm just curious whether, is this exposed to the environment or is it have a cover on it?
No, it's exposed.
The flume would be, but it would still have to travel out the flapper prior to it going through the flume. So the flapper would stop the cross-contamination, if that's what you're asking.
So
all the water it's measuring is after the fact. It's no longer accessible to go in the tank.
Right. A concern that we had was people who were filling at Spring 2 were leaving the flapper up. And that presented a risk of contamination back into the system, apparently. That's why there's a cage over it now.
So the water going far
downstream of the flapper. The flapper can still be in place.
Yeah.
It may be an issue with that at Spring 2, but at Spring 1 and Spring 3, it's not an issue.
So the water that's exposed to the air, to the outside, that does that go back into the system?
No.
Or is it discarded?
No, it's downstream.
Yeah. In other words, it flows on down the hill.
Okay.
If I understand correctly. Am I understanding correctly?
That's right, Dan.
Okay, all right.
After it leaves the flapper, it's non-potable at that point. And then we'd be measuring it at that point.
Right.
There's a weir there right now, but we've tried rebuilding it a couple of times. And it just needs replaced.
And I had another question or comment. The under the large tank section, there's discussion of the whole soils report issue of providing the soils report to the engineer, the structural engineer, and what use that can actually be when, as I noted in the report that I sent in, or the comments, that report was done at the time of the big tank was constructed. That geotechnical report actually is limited to the scope of what was done at the time. You have basically 10-foot deep water in the tank, and the loads on the ground from a taller water column would be quite a bit higher, and the earthquake load on a tank that was taller would also affect the bearing pressure due to the overturning moment. And so it kind of takes it out of the scope of the geotechnical report, I feel. The existing one, I think we'd need some supplemental, or you'd have to talk to the to whoever, whatever geotech was doing additional work on it to develop seismic design parameters. Would have to determine whether he wanted to use any part of that previous report or not. It's under somebody else's stamp, and he wouldn't, may not feel comfortable with using that report at all. What I'm getting at is that we may need an entirely new geotechnical report if we're going to put a taller tank on there, as opposed to an addendum to the existing report.
Is there a question in there?
That was a comment. Okay. I just wanted to comment on, let's see. So the your thing said the recently located soils report done before construction of a large tank should still tell us that the same site can support the taller steel, whether the same site can support a taller steel tank. And I don't know if we can really rely on that report because of its limitations.
And we should hear back from our consultants in that regard, I assume.
There was no expectation that that soils report would be sufficient. The question that will be addressed to the structural engineer is the site adequate for another 20 or, an additional 20 or 30 foot water column. And I sent the report to him Saturday, didn't get out Saturday, so it went out Wednesday, Monday. He should get it Wednesday. And I'll get face with it. But there was no expectation about that report being everything we needed, Tom.
Sorry, I didn't quite get your what you were saying there.
If I might paraphrase, I think what Buzz said was that there was no expectation that that the old soils report would be sufficient, but he did send it. It should be, because of the way the mail went out, it should be received by our consultant tomorrow. And, you know, I guess from my layman's standpoint, it gives them at least some idea of what's under there, even though it may not be what they need for, as Buzz said, for, you know, an additional 20 feet of water column.
Dead load, it's the seismic.
Right, yes.
Sorry, I got to tell the dog to be quiet. That was all I had.
Sadie wants to play with Rocky. That got them all going.
So, did you want me to talk about the tank at all?
Sure. I mean,
and Tom, I was supposed to get back a hold of you, and I was going to try to contact you today about going remeasuring, but we had issues with the vehicle that we'll talk about later.
Well, I'll just give you my two bits worth. On that day when Jonathan came down, we went in the tank, and on the inside, what I saw was that the roof slabs appear to be having some movement relative to the wall. You could see a margin along where the wall meets the roof slab on the west side, where it looks like it's been moving back and forth. So Jim and I measured after a little later on that day. Jim and I used some string lines to strung from corner to corner on the west wall and the north wall at a couple of different heights, at least on the west wall. And we used a plumb bob on the west wall to kind of see what that wall was doing, how much that was bowing out when it was empty. And we were going to do it again when it's full and see how much it's changing. When it was empty, at a height of 3 feet above the ground, the west wall in the center was bowed out about 7/8 of an inch. And if you go up to a 7-foot height above the ground on the west wall, it's bowed out in the center about 1 3/8 inches. This is relative to the ends of the wall. And when we hung a plumb bob from the top of the wall to the bottom, to the seven-foot elevation on, and measured how much it was leaning out. From the 7-foot height up to the top, it was leaning out about 3/4 of an inch. So we've got the center of that wall is bowing out and leaning out even when it's empty. And the north wall is, of course, it's half as long, and we just checked the bow on that, and it was bowed out about 3/8 of an inch relative to the corner points. And Jim said that the deflection that he's observed over time has increased in since what it used to be.
So can I ask, are those same measurements that Jim, you did earlier, and like about how long ago?
No, we have not done those measurements. We did elevations and shots to check to see if the tank was level or leaning from the floor or the roof. And then what I did with Tom was check the walls. So the floor and the roof are still square or pretty close when Buzz and I checked it to where they were supposed to be. But with Tom, we were checking it this way.
Oh, okay.
On the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a significant measurement, the 3/8 or 1 3/8 or something? Is that a big deal?
Well, I don't know what to say about those. I think it's just one more data point for as we go on to keep in mind that those walls are bowing out quite a bit, or at least the one wall is.
And I understand you're going to take full tank measurements to see what the change is from the from empty?
Yeah, and these numbers will also help explain what on the inside, when we were inside the empty tank, looking up at the top of the wall where the roof slab meets the wall, you could see that something's been going on there. The signs of the cement or grout, you can see where there's been a movement there, and it
a movement of the wall relative to the
that's what it looks like. We didn't know on the inside exactly what why it looked like that, but now the with the wall movement, with the wall measurements from the outside, I would say it's due to the wall bowing out under, well, we don't know from the water because we haven't checked it again, but I expect we'll see that it bows out even more. So that would explain why or what that looks like on the inside. It's not a good sign to have the walls moving that amount. Also on the inside, we saw that some of the roof slabs are sagging and the grout, there's no grout, so the cracks are opening. I think there used to be grout in there and it just has fallen out over time as things move around. The base seal between the floor slab and the wall looked good. And talking to Jim, that's not the original that they had so much trouble getting right. This is a retrofit that Jim did with the former, one of the board people. Is it Jim?
No, I believe Ted and Tom had done it at one point in time. And I could be incorrect, but I remember having a conversation with Tom Springer.
Oh, okay.
Replacing that at some point in time.
But that joint does look good. And of course, there's corrosion at the pipe, but the standpipe in the inside, it's pretty badly rusted out. And then moving to the outside just shows a lot of minerals. Where water's been passing through the wall and some wet spots where actually water still is moving visibly, you know, through the wall. There's patches in the corners where Jim's patched it and where he said that previously before he patched it, the rebar was exposed and corroded. And we noted on the north edge, we noted one of the rebars is exposed at this time at the top of the wall. It's not in the body of the wall, but in the rim that goes around the top of the wall. So that was what I saw on that day inspecting the tank. And then we took those tank measurements. The cracks that have been patched are not a good sign either, especially if they're all the way into the rebar. That indicates some kind of a structural problem. It would open up cracks like that. And the fact that this tank is not waterproofed on the inside and the concrete's been wet for its whole life is a concern regarding the rebar condition on the inside, especially if the deflection is getting worse over time. It may indicate that the rebar is degraded due to the being wet all those years and possibly made worse by the coastal environment with the chlorides. So I guess I would caution before getting too serious about a retrofit of the tank, that the rebar should be evaluated using non-destructive testing. I think they use a ground penetrating radar to survey the rebar in a wall like that, and they can actually see how much remaining rebar there is.
Have you ever had that done or know how much it costs for somebody to do something like that? Just out of curiosity.
I don't. We'd have to call somebody up.
Okay.
Tom, do we have any seismic information that might explain why the tank seems to be, the walls seem to be moving?
I don't think that's related to seismic. We haven't really been having earthquakes. It's just the ones we're expecting is very infrequent earthquake, and there may have been a few small ones over the years, but nothing significant.
Well, if the base, the foundation of the tank is still relatively plumb and the roof is still plumb, what would be causing, do we think, causing the walls to move?
Water pressure.
Yeah.
Just the flux of the water pressure constantly? Okay.
Just the weight. When you fill a container with water, the deeper it is, the more pressure there is.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
It's just like when you have a partially deflated milk jug and you fill it up, the walls pop back out into shape.
Right.
So the problem, it seems to me, is we really don't have a baseline to tell us how much that wall has moved over a period of time, do we? We don't know whether there was a bow in it when they constructed it, whether it was slightly leaning, but we do know that the tank is deteriorating to some point. That's basically what we know, right?
Well, I think a good answer to that would be when I had first started and I cleaned out the tank, the outer walls were still in line. And I've noticed over the last few years that you can see up, if you look up at the top wall, there's a gap that's starting. And so within the last few years, that outer wall has actually slid out. And that's what I was so concerned about with Tom, because you can still see the concrete up there, and it's pretty fresh. It's not like this has happened over 20 years. It's, mm-hmm. it's within 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. You can see the line as the wall is moving away from the roof, because the concrete where initially was is pretty clean in that inch and a half section. So that's why I consulted with Tom and to look at it.
From a layman's standpoint, I guess my hope would be that we find, by whatever studies it takes, that that same site that we own could support a taller tank with a higher water column. That would make the tank issue moot, and also the increased head would solve, combined with the distribution system, would solve some of our other problems like fire flow and water pressure at the same time.
Yeah, if the old soils report had an allowable bearing pressure, but that was only for at the level that they dug down to.
Right, right.
There's all kinds of foundations you could use to get more capacity. There's other options for foundation at the site.
Sure.
other than sure. just in with the, that level, that depth, and that bearing pressure. You can, the deeper you go in general, the more bearing pressure you apply. And mm-hmm. and there's other types of foundations. You could put in some kind of a deep foundation, and that'll get you a lot of extra capacity. That tank, tall tank like that, would probably need to go quite a bit deeper, and because it's going to have to resist uplift on one side, not just a pure down gravity load of water. When it tries to tip over, to keep it from tipping over in an earthquake, you're going to have one side pressing down and the other side trying to lift up. Uh-huh. So you might have to put some shafts down there or piles.
Yeah. So the idea would be to have a deeper foundation, but still be able to keep the tank high enough that we get the head we need. Mm-hmm.
Are there any more comments?
Well, since I got the floor, I'll just, I guess, mention a couple other things that were on my list. I've been reading the Oregon Resilience Plan. It's available online. I can give you the address, anybody who wants it. And let's see the full title. There's a chapter in specific on water and wastewater systems, and it talks about the, and plus other chapters on other topics and more general about the earthquake risk. And pretty detailed report with a lot of experts. It's a few years old, but it's got a lot of good information. And it talks about the whole idea of seismic resilience, and it identifies coastal communities as one of the highest risk zones, and the longest, the most expensive to deal with because of the proximity to the fault and or the subduction zone event, the epicenter, and because of its distance from everything, it's harder to get anything done down here. And so it identifies a lot of issues. It actually it predicts response times based on all the challenges that we face at the coast. And it looks at structures that were designed in different time frames, time periods, and under different design codes pertaining to seismic design. And it gives kind of a picture of, for each vintage of structure, how they will behave in the big one, and how long it will take to deal with. Well, it identifies our situation as, for both of those tanks, as probably both collapse because of when they were designed. That doesn't account for if somebody the smaller tank, if they designed way above code requirements, that you could have extra capacity that's not accounted for. But it is predicting they would probably both collapse. And it talks about developing a plan, a long-range plan, and implementing it in different phases, doing the backbone first, and they're giving a 50-year time frame to try and upgrade your structures, which that was pretty amazing. But they acknowledge that most of the water districts are not able to afford just a complete fix all at once. So they're recommending this backbone approach where you do the essential things. But for our system, that's most of ours is backbone. Anyway, the tank and the main lines, that's, you know, that's still most of our system. But it's an interesting read, and I recommend it to all of you to read. Let's see what I write down about that.
So Tom, could you just email us the link to that?
I can, yes.
It'd be great.
That'd be great.
So that is leads me into another document, which I may have mentioned before, which is the, so that was the Oregon Resilience Plan under the Office of Emergency Management, Oregon. And then the other one I was going to mention is the Oregon Administrative Rules section on the Oregon Health Authority drinking water, which is puts out the rules for the drinking water. And there's a subsection in that that requires for most water districts to have a master plan by an it has to be prepared by a registered engineer. And within that requirement for the master plan, it also requires a seismic risk and mitigation plan, a risk assessment and mitigation plan. And there's an exemption for small districts, so we would be within that exemption, but I think there's some, there would be some, an advantage to doing that, to developing the master plan and the seismic mitigation plan, not only for helping us know what to do with upgrading the system, but also it could help with obtaining loans and grants.
We just had a master plan done.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that, Tom?
Well, yeah, I'm very aware of that. And I'm aware of the report, the Civil West report. It was not called a master plan.
That's right.
The stamp on the plan, I mean, the title of the plan is Water System Feasibility Study and Planning Support. And when you say master plan, that has a technical meaning as far as this rule goes. And I don't know if that would qualify for that or not.
Well, that's what the grant was that paid for. It was for a new master plan. So maybe it's the same word, just worded in different ways, because the grant was for a master plan.
I think it really was structured more like a feasibility study with options and so forth. I remember Rod telling us not to call it a master plan because it actually technically wasn't a master plan.
Oh.
Oh, man. That's plus, bad news.
Well.
Plus the fact that we're not really using it. We've kind of taken exception to it.
Yeah. It did do some of the things. It described the state of the system. It offered some possible options. But yeah, I have no idea if it would really pass as a master plan. And like Tom says, we're really not, well, it would be hard to do all of the things that they put in there because they offered different options. Fix the tank, replace the tank, you know, things like that. So it wasn't as if we had adopted, this is what we're going to do. I mean, I think that's more about what we're beginning to talk about now.
And I just have one more thing. I think it might be helpful in decision-making and keeping on track to develop a mission statement, or call it a mission statement, or guiding principles or goals. An example of that would be seismic resilience. Is seismic resilience of the system one of our goals or not? If we said it was, then when the decision came to what to do with the tank, we would go to the goals and say, or the mission statement, and say, right there, we've agreed that it's going to do that, so it's not going to stand up in an earthquake, so we better plan on replacing it. That kind of logic.
I remember the other firm in Newburgh, who also bid for that feasibility study. I remember chatting with that guy. Rod sent me in to pick up some documents. I think it was some of those hand-drawn maps or whatever. And just chatting with the guy there, he said, just off the cuff, that constructing a system that would survive a Cascadia event, he said, he couldn't see that being financially feasible. It would cost so much, it would have to be so heavily engineered that he would be amazed if a district our size could actually fund it. But on the other hand, if a miracle happened and infrastructure funds actually became available.
Well, this Oregon Resilience Report talks about structures that were designed under the newer codes.
Yeah.
And they're saying in that, that the structures will survive designed under the new codes. And
yes, but they also don't mention any funding. From the sections I read, they've got great recommendations, but nothing is promised in the way of actually finding funding for doing it. I agree. It can be. That's what this guy said too. It can be done. But he said, good luck finding the money to pay for it. And I guess we can hope that in future, somehow this spigot of money will be turned back on. But I personally would like to see us have a seismically resilient system. Right now, the Otter Rock CERT group is basically assuming that we will have no water system at all, and that we will be subsisting on whatever we can safely filter from our two perennial streams that come through our community. We're actually ahead of the game compared to a lot of other communities along the coast in that we have two perennial streams that run to some extent through the year. No one knows exactly whether water will still leak out of the mountain in the same place as it does now after the quake. I'll just be quiet. In my heart of hearts, I really want a seismically resilient system. It's just, I have no idea if I'll ever be able to afford it. Buzz.
2 years ago when I met with Bill Peace and Cameron Swearingen, That was the first thing they asked me. And they pretty much said the same thing. Seismic design is spendy.
Say that again? I missed that.
The two structural MSC engineers, I met with them 2 years ago. The first thing they asked me was, were we interested in seismic resistance? And I said, I don't know. And they said, it could be very expensive to bring that old concrete tank back up to some kind of seismic resistance.
I guess what's expensive? I mean, if we're talking about spending $120 a month, you know, getting loans and grants and ending up with $120 a month bill, then so be it. I mean, everybody has to. Not free anywhere.
Yeah, and that's what is expensive. So far, that's the $64 question. We're just trying to find out what it's going to cost to get a new tank up there. And we've been beating this subject around for the last 6, 8 months, year. And now we're on that track. They have the latest seismic information we have available, and we're going to talk to them. We have an idea that a steel tank may be the best, a viable option. And we're going to ask them if a foundation can be designed for that steel tank. And I expect we'll hear all the options on costs of seismic design once again, when they address that question. And hopefully that'll be fairly soon. But I also think, and I was telling Pat this today, that before we get any answers out of anybody, we're probably looking at several thousand dollars that we're going to have to spend for another soils report before we can get any information at all. That's what they told us that 2 months ago in the gym, that they couldn't evaluate. Cameron said this. They can't evaluate placing soil alongside the steel tank or buttressing the sides without a knowledge of the soils. And since then, we've come up with a third option to those first two, and that's a steel tank. And at some point, I think we're going to have on the next budget or whenever, we're going to have to get a soils evaluation in here, and that's going to cost us a lot of money before we get any answers. Mm-hmm. So we're on that track right now.
Yep.
Well, question, would that soil evaluation probably be good for whatever we decide down the road?
I'm sorry, Beth, I didn't.
Would that soil evaluation be good for whatever option we go with? Would it help for a replacement tank as well as repairing the existing one?
Yes. That's what we'd want to find out.
Right.
I think the soils evaluation for the existing one, well, I know it. They took boreholes that are right where the tank is, the floor of the tank is right now.
So three borings, yeah.
So
20 feet deep. They were only 20 feet deep.
So any supplemental holes, unless we tear the top off the existing tank and one of the walls and drive in there and cut a hole in the floor, and do, I don't know what they would do different for seismic evaluations, but.
Well, the depth might
answer your question, Beth. only area available, but maybe Tom can address this better, but the only available right area right now for supplemental work is around the perimeter of that tank. And I don't know if that would do us any good, because the thinking now is to put the base of the tank on the floor of the existing tank. Can you help me out here, Tom?
Well, whenever you get a geotechnical report, they want to know what you're proposing, and they'll want to know what, you know, basically, in order to give you a good report, they need to know what you're proposing to put on the site. And so it's kind of an iterative process. You might get a preliminary and then a final and iterate a couple of times. And but it comes down to the more you know about what you want to put there, the better report information you're going to get. And if they know you have a certain type of load, they might go deeper than if they, with their test holes, than if you're proposing a different kind of a loading or foundation or structure.
Yeah, but Beth, the short answer to your question is we don't know. And I guess we've given that engineer the old soils report. We're going to tell him what it is we're interested in as options. And hopefully we'll get some guidance from him as to what kind of additional information he needs. Then we'll go to a geotechnical company that does that, and we'll get a cost estimate from them as to what it's going to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
If we do decide to get a soils report, we were recommended by several people that have looked at Spring One that it might be a good time to do some test holes up there to see where the spring channel is. So I think that we could combine, if we do go down that road, we can combine multiple jobs to do that.
And can I add one more thing, Beth? The goal that everybody's forgetting, or, you know, that hasn't been mentioned yet tonight, is we want to get a number to tell us what to put on an application. Is that correct, Lisa? To go for, to find out if there's some money that can be obtained for construction of a newer system.
Well, yeah, we need figures.
Yeah, it's budgetary numbers is what we're looking for. And unfortunately, I think the numbers that we developed, and this is what we did last Wednesday, for mainly on the distribution system, I think that's pretty straightforward in bookkeeping. I don't think we're going to have to go on out and get any expensive tests to do that, even though that's the big chunk of money in the budget. The tough one is money, I think, front money out of our pocket to get the information that we need to get a good budget number for how much that tank's going to cost.
Right. So are we ready to move on to budget discussion items?
I am.
Are we ready to move on to budget, the next item on the agenda, which is the budget discussion items?
Ready when you are. Let's see, I'm going to give you a very brief report. I believe that we have a very, very narrow margin to operate to the end of this fiscal year. Unfortunately, the car in the ditch and on our pipe intervened with my entire day today. So I had hoped to have something more solid than just saying that we need to be very cautious about what we decide to undertake that isn't all hasn't already been entered into this budget year. And the other thing I need is from you all is if we can figure out some projects that we would like to be able to do in the next fiscal year, or if there's equipment we need, if anybody has any needs that should be considered for the budget, I need to know those. And I need to know them real soon. So it's not a problem to send me a wish list. Jim and Buzz and I have been trying to nail down some things that they have on their immediate horizon. But I need other things. For instance, we have no adequate system for keeping track of keys for the district, valuable records. We have lots of old documents that we should be protecting that we can't because they're just in a file cabinet in the closet. The papers are deteriorating. The office really should have a locking file cabinet that's fireproof. I think one cabinet could probably take care of most of the needs for document preservation, but we also could possibly look at a fireproof, waterproof safe that's a little bit bigger than normal. Those are the kinds of things I'm thinking about. Because those are the things I see, and others of you see other needs beyond our infrastructure. So please, if you have some thoughts about that, would you get them to me in the next, by the weekend? Would that be okay? Yeah. Is that possible? Yes, hi.
I have a question. You know, I talked about that soils report.
Uh-huh.
If we indeed, the likelihood of having to do that, and that's big bucks. I think Jonathan at Cascade Waterworks estimated 10,000 to 12,000, am I correct?
I got it.
Oh, yes, I think that is exactly what he quoted.
Eric got a bid 2 years ago to do a report for spring number one, and I believe it came in right at $10,000, and that was for them to do the report up there, but that wasn't for the tank, so that sounds about right.
So I guess that's a priority for us to talk to the engineers and see if we can get a quick answer from them about the extent of the work information they're going to need, and then go to a soils firm and ask them for a budgetary estimate.
Sure.
And that's going to take a while, Pat, and more than a week.
Okay. Well, I can live with I can go with a $10,000 to $12,000 estimate. I'm not saying that I can find you the money for it, but
of course
I've got it on the list here. The board's job then would be to prioritize things like that so that when the budget committee is considering that, they know what direction the board wants to go and see if there are some other places where maybe we can cut back a bit in order to be able to do that.
Fair enough.
So do we know how much we have left for this fiscal year so that we can schedule jobs and prioritize them as for what money we have or what money we have coming before the end of the year?
Okay. When I said that we are going to be on a very tight budget for the next 2.25 months, that's what I mean. It's squeaking by.
We don't have a number because I don't know whether to order parts or not.
Okay. If the parts you're wanting to order have already been allowed in the current budget, then we should be fine. If this is a new project, then...
I don't know, because in the past I've purchased meters and pipe based upon how much money we had left in the budget. So I guess maybe we need to meet and figure out what the number...
Well, I need probably a full day in the office uninterrupted so I can feel confident that I have all the numbers correct for this budget. And then I can project what we have left for the next 2 months. And I think it's going to be a very narrow margin. I don't think we're going to be able to undertake a whole new batch of things. Now, we could decide that perhaps your time is better spent in one area than another. The board can make those decisions. And I wish I could tell you more. I've been 4 days dealing with that car in the ditch. And all day today, three of us tied up all day today with that.
Speaking of that, can I just ask him a question?
No, we were going to review it tonight after this. I thought it was a budget meeting that we were going to talk about the car in a minute.
Matt, when you said that car upset your calculations for your expectations for money to the end of the year, is that what you just said?
No, not at all. No, what I said was, I had planned to spend the whole day in the office getting you a hard number to look at tonight.
Okay.
And but the
yeah. I get it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll need?
Can the rates be increased to generate more working capital?
That's always a possibility if the board approves a rate increase. Sure.
So. That's part of what the budget committee produces for us each June is a budget and how to fund it. And if the budget committee was to say the only way we can do this is with a rate increase, then that is something the board would have to consider and vote on with a period of public comment. That's why, although we get the budget proposal at the June board meeting, we actually convene 2 weeks later to actually approve the budget after a 2 week waiting period. But the time that rates are considered is during that June budget process that actually, is starting this month. And that's why we usually have our biggest attendance for the June board meeting, because everybody's afraid we're going to raise the rates.
Is a surcharge with a sunset clause in it, is that ever a consideration? Like a $10 a month surcharge reviewed after 1 year, if you've got specific numbers about where it's going to go?
I have no idea. I think ultimately we decide whether the rate for the coming year is going to stay where it is, if it's going to be reduced, if it's going to be increased. Okay. And I mean, as I recall, the last couple of years, we've actually called $20 of the current rate as devoted to system improvements.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Right. And some people have said that's meters, and others people have said, no, that's system improvements, which includes meters. But that was actually, that's sort of a budget designation where we say of our income for the year, we're setting aside this month much for system improvements. I think my understanding is pretty basic, not very sophisticated, but basically we set the rate for the year when we adopt the budget. That's part of the budget. How much is coming in?
So, Pat, will you have a figure with how long do you think it'll take before you can have a figure so we can make a decision on what we're going to do?
For the remainder of the year, you're asking about, right?
Yeah, because if I buy the meters that were forecasted and the parts that were forecasted, then we're talking about $8,000. If you're talking about me doing the line that needs to be replaced between spring one and the small tank, you're talking about $500 in parts. Mm-hmm. So if I need a number so that I can decide what, you know, it's, I have no idea where we're at. I have no idea how much.
What you need is a number, a decent estimate of what we have left to spend on system maintenance and system improvements.
Exactly. Yeah, because I went into the fiscal year with a lot of parts. We had 10 meters at the time because we had money, that, or at least so I was told. And now I don't have a number, and I need a number so that I can finish out the year with whatever was forecasted. And it doesn't necessarily have to go to meters. It can go to whatever's highest on the priority list that the board decides. But I need to know what to order on that list, because if there's a big difference between a few grand and 10 grand.
Yes. Yes. Well, thanks to all the work that Pat's been doing with Lurlin, getting our books finally in order, being able to reconcile our base statements, being actually able to find out what we have. It sounds like, Pat, you need another couple of days, though, before you can really.
I hope it would be done by then. I frankly need a break from it myself. Yes. We just got an actual budget report for the first time last Friday. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of doing that, we had this car thing to deal with. And for instance, today, we're probably looking at an unplanned expenditure of up near $2,000 from that car incident. We have the person who owns the car has no insurance. Our insurance will not cover that because the car wasn't wrecked on our property, even though it was on our pipe. And so there's no apparent recourse there. And so that's an unexpected expenditure that we did not need. And Jim, I know you're stressing about this, as I am. I'm making every effort I can to get this done. I'm just gonna say that I think if we have a savings in one area that we can use for the things you're asking about, then of course we would choose to do that. I just don't want to speak about it right at the moment because I'm not sure what the bottom line number is.
Right. Understood.
And what I'm trying to do is project out what our costs will be for the next 2 months, what our minimal costs will be. Mm-hmm. so that I can get an ending number or something close.
Do you think we should have a short work session at some point next week?
We might need to do that. I am... if I don't have a number by then, I'm probably never going to. So, yeah. I'm sorry. It's no longer funny for me.
No. I understand. But these are public meetings, but we can notice these meetings on 24 hours notice because we're in Oregon. It would be 72 hours notice in California, apparently.
Right.
And we have the means to publish the notice, so we don't have to set a date and time now, as long as once you feel that you're comfortable that you've got as much data as we're going to get, we can always set something for next week. Anybody going to be out of town next week?
No.
Probably not.
And other than me. Once I have this to a satisfactory point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the board needs to actually act on anything.
So we don't need to make any decisions.
Are deciding to use funds from one area of the budget for another, that's mm-hmm. an easy decision.
Okay.
And, I don't think Jim is going to have to make a presentation. He and Buzz did give me some idea of like the top three other projects they feel need to get done between now and the end of the fiscal year. So I have some numbers there that I can project out. So that's good progress.
Okay.
Just got those today.
So we can make an administrative decision, not having to vote.
I think so.
Great. Works.
Now, if there's anything beyond what's in the budget, of course, that's a whole ballgame.
Oh, yeah.
We won't be able to do that.
No. Okay.
Do we want to go over board member assignments and responsibilities?
I'd like to suggest that be evaluated maybe in July. We're going to have to help each other however we can and push through the next 2 months. And I don't think it matters what it says in my job description or
exactly
anybody's. We just have to depend on each other to help out. And I will have to say that it's been fantastic how everybody has been working to the best of their abilities to try to keep things moving along here.
I've been impressed with how we've been working as a team the last few weeks. An example, what Beth did with notifying all the people about the water shutoff for the auto. And
you did a lot too, Dan.
Well, you did the legwork. I did the computer and stare at the list work, but you did the legwork. But between the two of us, we got her done.
And I'd have to say that if any of us were getting paid by the hour, it would probably be about a tenth of a penny per hour.
Mm-hmm.
That there are just so many hours in the day and we're volunteers and we're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
So Pat, can you explain about the car? I want to know.
Who wants to tell the story?
How about Jim?
Or anyone?
Jim, you want to tell the tale?
Yeah, I'll chime in. We don't know for sure, but it appears as if that somebody may have tried to pull the car out and it went back down. So the car initially looked as if it had hit a pillar and was kind of stuck there. And then when we went back today at noon, it looked like it had moved over about 8 feet to hit the pipe. Yeah. So it's almost as if somebody tried to pull it out, and once the strap broke, it went back.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly what we had feared was going to happen. Yeah.
I had talked to Dan about that last week, and we both had mentioned that we hope nobody tries to hook up to it, and it'll fall back down. So, at any rate, the long story short, a tow company came and had to use a truck with a crane on it to pull it up and get it out of there. And then once it was out of there, we had to hire Joe to come out and clear out all the brush. And then we took a strap and pulled some of the posts and got the water line back on the bridge. The water line is basically set on posts in a bridge, and they had knocked a section of it off, the car had. So we had to get it back put onto place.
And it didn't break the line. It amazes me.
No, we turned the line off while they removed the car because the car was between the line and the bank. Right. And so we did relieve the pressure and then went ahead and did the work that we needed to do and turned it back on. However, the condition of the bridge is not the best either. So the pillars, one of them is broken because of the car. Two of them are broken because of the car. And then if you look down it, there's some of them sagging, some of them are warped, some of them are rotted. They basically took power creosote covered power poles and lined a tube across and slid the pipe in it. Short version of the story. And over time, the posts have leaned and sagged and cracked and broke. And that's just a section that eventually is probably going to need replaced. So for now, I'm going to get enough straps and whatever I can find to put it together. But it might be worth looking into what Buzz and I were about boring and not having to worry about rebuilding that bridge, because it's probably going to be expensive to do that project. Do you feel the same way, Buzz?
Expensive for what?
To repair or replace what's already there would probably cost more than boring a big section of line and replacing it with a brand new line. Yeah. Just the way it's engineered and how far off it is into the gully, it's just, I think it would cost more than what it was worth.
Were the police involved?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were. They did not cite the driver, who was underage and unlicensed and had been drinking, apparently. There is a police report, but our insurance says that we do not have a claim because that is not technically our property on which the car landed. It is the road right of way and an easement.
So our insurance only covers damages that occurs on real estate that we own?
Apparently.
Well, what happens if somebody hits a hydrant or the bank slides out? Or
well, we could
hope within our district.
We will hope that they have insurance. In this case, there is no insurance on the vehicle. So there's just almost no recourse that we could afford to follow.
Okay. I think we need to look at our insurance coverage this coming year and see if there is a policy that will at least cover damage to our property when it's in a right-of-way, because we are a utility.
Right.
It just seems inadequate, and I don't know how much more a better policy would cost, but I think we should at least look at it.
And it may be that another policy would also not cover those same kinds of things. It
could be that I have no idea the state of the market for insurance for utilities.
This company is what SDAO provides. Mm-hmm. And that's, we should always.
I have a, sorry, Pat, go, and then I'll go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I am hoping that because it's a referral from SDAO, that it's probably about the best policy we can get for that amount of money. $2,700 a year.
Wow. That's
but that also covers commissioners and they used to call it, errors and omissions, but now they just call it crime. It covers all of us for
Liability?
Liability, right? And it covers the tank farm and it covers the community center.
So, is it for the tank if it falls down in an earthquake?
No, unfortunately not.
So what?
But my twin is she was an insurance agent. And if you have claims on your policies, they are more likely to cancel you and not renew you. And I know that's sucky to hear, but it's the truth. So,
well, we can't even file a claim.
I know, but if we do get a better policy and we do put a claim on it, you know, they're more than likely to dump us.
That's true. Yeah, that happens to personal policies also.
Yeah.
I think you need to find something that covers the pipeline, because what if the pipeline had been broken and there was damages? Or what if somebody hits a fire hydrant and then their car is able to drive and they drive off and we have a geyser that washes out somebody's house or lot? I mean, this sounds really odd for a utility insurance company to not cover pipeline or a water district.
Well, that policy was purchased. Oh, let me see. When did it renew? In January, I believe. And I have no idea what investigating was done about.
Yeah, maybe the agent. Well,
it sounds odd to me that they didn't cite the driver if it's illegal to drive without insurance.
Yep, the whole thing is kind of strange.
I wonder who paid for the Gladys slide when half the hill went down because our water was leaking. Hadn't been our insurance.
Didn't it?
You think there was a claim against our insurance?
Oh, years and years ago, but.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Because we've had no claims in the past year.
Yeah, no, I'm talking years ago, we had a section of Gladys slide off into a homeowner's yard and partially
right below my house.
Yeah, and that was a lot of work to put that back together, and I would probably be willing to bet the district didn't incur the cost on that one because there was involved in pipelines replaced and sections.
I've never seen anything about that, so I don't know.
Yeah, that was a big one. That was redoing part of Gladys.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is, if something like that were to happen and we're not covered, maybe we need to look into getting covered for something like that happens again.
I agree. So we'll have a committee take a look at our insurance when it's up for renewal.
Yeah, just a suggestion. I mean, that's up to you guys. I just know that.
Well, it's true. I mean, we should not be automatically renewing things like that if we're not happy with the coverage.
Do we have any other topics, business, anything? Anyone want to say anything anymore?
I have nothing more.
Jim, when do you want to take those measurements?
We can do it tomorrow. I know I had today scheduled, but that went crazy in a hurry. Sorry. So if you want to get a hold of me in the morning, I'm available all day tomorrow or Thursday or whatever works for you.
Okay.
So are we, we're rescheduling, talking about member assignments till somewhere down the road, a couple months or so? Was that what I heard?
Yes.
And the only thing, other thing was the good old AIC.
Right. So what I would propose is that those of us who get a chance to look at it, if you would send me the items that you consider done or changed or whatever, I can be the AIC nanny for the time being and update it. It would be really nice to have that updated offline and then presented at the next board meeting rather than spending half an hour as we have at some board meetings talking about the list.
Yes, good idea.
So I volunteer to be AIC nanny for the time being.
Who has the most current list?
I was sent the most current list.
Could you send that out? I don't think I have a copy of it. The one I had hadn't been looked at for months.
If I had not, I'm pretty sure I sent an email out that had the three versions. If not, then I must have forgotten.
We have three versions.
Yeah. Well, no, we have the whole list. We have the list that just has the active unfinished items on it. And then there's another version of that that had a notation from the December meeting. And those are three sheets in the same spreadsheet. And if I fail to send it out, and I'll sometimes spend a long time on an email and then forget to press send. So let me know if you guys didn't get it and I will send it again.
I may have lost it.
Okay, I'll resend.
Thank you, Dan.
No problem. So are we adjourning?
Do we want to schedule the next work meeting?
Why not?
Could I ask for another work session if I think we need it after I get through with the rest of this week on the budget?
Yeah.
That's what you want to have a work session about.
We can schedule one by email. It's just we can't hold the meeting without posting it.
Right.
Right. But yeah, we can just see.
Okay. Pat, do you need any help with the budget? Is there anything we can help you with?
Thank you. I actually have Lurlin scheduled for Thursday. And I think that will do it, but I may want somebody else to look at it with me after. So I'll let you know.
Okay.
If that's okay.
It's perfect.
Okay.
So I move to adjourn the Otter Rock Water Board work session at 7:35 PM.
Wait.
One second.
I thought we had an executive session. For employees.
Not this time.
Sweet.
So we are adjourned.
Okay.
Have a good night, everyone.
Stop the recording.
Good night. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. The pipeline.
Yeah.